Today is November 1st, 2017, and this is episode number 435 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I have it on excellent authority that I look really cute pretending to hold Mickey Mouse balloons. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM, boom, 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 at macobserver.com.
I will vouch for you for your level of cuteness holding Mickey Mouse balloons.
Pretending.
Yes. Pretending to hold Mickey Mouse balloons.
Yeah, recently went to, I think that was actually at California Disney Adventures.
Mm-hmm.
Do not remember posing for that.
That's how good Disney is.
It's like my hand is like I'm holding my hand up with a closed fist, like I'm holding balloon. I don't remember doing that. I remember that photographer taking our pictures, but I don't remember being asked to pretend like I'm holding something.
I've got this vision in my head of it's like Mickey out there and he's like, ha, ha, pose like you're going to fight for your right to party. Ha ha ha. And so you do a fist pump in the air and he Photoshops balloons into it.
That's delightful.
We should
get your Mickey and my Felix together. We could have an actual party.
We could have an actual party.
An actual party, yeah.
Yeah. Anyhow, but now we know what it looks like when you fight for your right to party.
Yes. Yes, we do. So, or something like that. Something similar. It's close.
It's very close.
It's very, very close. Yes.
Yeah. So.
Right.
Should I just do the outro music and call it good?
Oh, yeah. No, because you remember that thing we did last week where I got you to sort of like coach me on HomeKit stuff and then we called it content?
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, I want to do that again.
I see. So you're going to exploit me for my knowledge.
Yes, and we're going to pawn that off.
As content.
As content for our listeners.
And that, people, is how sausage is made.
Exactly. No, but seriously. So I got a couple of Sylvania Smart Plus. We talked about those, right?
Yeah.
Smart Plus bulbs.
Those are the ones that connect to your Wi-Fi network directly. They do not need a hub. And these are the ones that are not Wi-Fi, but HomeKit only.
Yes, they're HomeKit only. Although, to be fair, I don't have another system here that I could see if they would connect to. But they're marketed as HomeKit only.
Is there an Echo or Echo Dot in your environment?
Yes.
Okay, so here's something that you'll need to try.
It's not mine.
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Just get near it, and instead of being the usual mean guy you are to the Echo, just get near it and say,
"Really, really mean to that Echo."
You are. So maybe you should be nice to it this time and say, Alexa, find new devices.
Hmm.
And then what it does is it, there we go. My Echo is now looking for new devices.
That's excellent.
Yeah, it's not going to find it. It better not find any. But anyhow, that's how you can get the Echo to see if it can find any devices that
I see.
Can control.
I see. All right. Nonetheless, I got two of these bulbs. Got them up in my ceiling now. I got the full color bulbs. The white bulbs, at least as of last week, weren't shipping yet.
That's okay. Going with the full color bulbs, since this is really your first foray into all this, and you have me to use. Wait,
my first foray? Or foray?
You're doing a foray?
Oh, that seems like that's what you're saying.
No, I thought you're doing a foray. Foray. But if you want to do a four-way, I am not going to judge. And you know what? More power to you. Just make sure you eat first. You need to keep your energy up.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Anyway, it's my first foray into home automation. Yes, mm-hmm. You're saying.
And if it was someone that was just getting into this and having to figure it out on their own, I'd say just get a white bulb and call it good, because it takes out a lot of variables. But since you have me to turn to, and we can turn it into show content as well, I'm glad you went with the color bulbs.
Okay, well that's good, because I do have some questions.
Oh, what a surprise. Okay.
Yeah. So first of all, I notice when the bulbs are first activated, sometimes they cycle through the three colors, the red, blue, and green. Mm-hmm. Is that normal? Let me rephrase that. Does Philips, the Hue bulbs, do they do that too?
Are you like flipping a light switch to turn them on? And that's when you're seeing this?
No, I'm sometimes seeing it when I just activate a scene.
Like, okay. No, that doesn't sound normal.
Sounds kind of lame, doesn't it?
It does. And so now I'm thinking I really need to get a hold of one of these and test it and see if
I can. Sometimes it doesn't even cycle through all the colors. Sometimes it'll just so I'm usually using, I've got a scene for a blue light during the day, mm-hmm. for working. And then for evening and middle of the night stuff, I've got a red or soft, somewhere between red and yellow.
Mm-hmm. A warmer color.
A warmer color, yeah.
Okay.
And sometimes it'll be just the green light that it cycles through, and it's not always both of them. And it's not always every time. Sometimes it just actually goes straight to where it's supposed to be.
And both bulbs do this.
But sometimes,
but not consistently.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that behavior does not seem good to me. And that, I don't know if this is an issue with,
right.
If this is an issue with Sylvania, or if this is somehow it's HomeKit that's actually cycling through these, but I doubt that.
I doubt that. I think it's the bulbs. So what we need to figure out now is if this is just something the bulbs do, or if there's something wrong with them.
Right. And I have two different ones, and that's all. And I'm going to get a third one. It turns out there's a third slot. My ceiling fixture has three sockets in it.
Okay. So, yeah, put a third one in there, and do me a favor and go get the third one from someplace different. Because that's
different batch.
Different batch.
Yeah, different batch. Yeah. All right. So, next question is that the home app seems to suck balls. That's a technical term.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to the support group, my friend.
All right. So this is a known issue, right? Other people also think that the home app sucks balls.
Yes, but you're not going to be able to get away from it completely, because if you want to set up a lot of the different actions, then you have to do it from Apple's home app.
Well, that makes sense. And so one of the things I set up was leaving home, just to essentially to make sure that my lights get turned off if I accidentally leave them on. Mm-hmm. And I tested that. I left home, came back, and the lights are still on. I was not impressed with that. And that seems to me to be an issue with HomeKit, not with the bulbs.
I would agree. So yeah, what you're experiencing is the same sort of thing that I have seen before, which is that geolocation doesn't always work reliably with HomeKit.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, I know.
Apple has they control the whole widget.
Yeah,
they've got to make this stuff work.
So. Does Sylvania have their own app for the bulbs?
Don't know. Maybe. Didn't look.
So I would check and see if they do. And if they do, download it, because it may give you direct control over the bulbs as well. And if so, maybe you can set up your geofencing through there and it'll work more reliably. So here's what I have done, because I've experienced the same problem many times. With my Hue bulbs, I actually use the Hue app and let it do its own on-off thing for geofencing. And I actually don't have HomeKit doing any geofence stuff at all. Mm-hmm. The automated stuff that I have HomeKit doing, it's all like time triggered. Or I have a motion trigger that turns my entry light off as well. So if I'm doing a very physical trigger like motion or a door opens, I'm okay with HomeKit doing that type of automation.
Right.
But for geolocation, I prefer the native apps from the manufacturers.
Fair enough. And I just downloaded the Sylvania Smart Home app.
Okay. So here's another thing about that app. It may also give you access to your other HomeKit devices, because a lot of the apps like this will.
I don't have any other HomeKit devices yet.
Doesn't matter. It also gives you access to HomeKit.
Yeah, I fired it up and it immediately found the two light bulbs I'd already set up in Home.
Right. Okay.
And that's good. It asked me for access to my Home data. And of course, I gave it permission.
That's great. Okay. So you may be able to do some of the things you want in there. If you want to find a different app that gives you a less sucky experience with HomeKit, other than setting up a lot of these very specific automated things, the Eve app from Elgato is really nice. My favorite, though, you're going to have to pay for. I think it's a $15 app, and it's called Home. And it came out long before Apple released their own app called Home.
That's probably where Apple got the idea.
That wouldn't surprise me. Their icon looks surprisingly similar to the Home icon for the Home app that I prefer.
So I see this. So this app launches. It shows my devices. It says updates available, but doesn't actually list anything, and I can't do anything with anything. And there's no buttons to go anywhere else in the app. So, you know, that's a big win.
That's a big win. All right. So if we can figure out how you can actually do something more in that app, that may be useful, because it's possible the red, green, blue, intermittent, flashy thing you're getting is a firmware issue.
Yeah.
Or it could be that they're doing something weird where if there's a firmware update available, the bulbs flash like that, which would be annoying as crap. So I'm thinking there's a firmware update and maybe the Sylvania app is going to fix that. But here's another thing that you will have to get used to now that you're in the HomeKit world. Mm-hmm. A lot of these devices, to get the firmware updates, need to have their native app available, because HomeKit won't look for that sort of thing. So in my case, excuse me, in addition to the Home app and the Home app, the Home app I use, the third-party app, and then Apple's Home app, I also have each app for each of the device types that I have. And I have to go to those to do all the other stuff.
Hmm. All right, fair enough. Next question. This was something I always had an issue with when I watched people do Alexa home automation. Mm-hmm. Takes too long. It's faster just to do it.
Oh, you mean like when you tell the Echo to do something and then it does it?
Yes.
Yeah, depending on the devices, it also depends on your network connection, I think. For me, assuming my Echo actually can do what it's supposed to in that instance, meaning it's just not reliable, it typically happens very quickly. Like if I tell Alexa to turn on the living room lights or the bedroom lights or turn something off, it tends to happen very— I think I just turned on half the lights in my place. it tends to happen very quickly.
Well, I'm finding here so far with about 4 days of working with this stuff, mm-hmm, I'm finding that Siri is also slow.
I have found Siri to be slower than Alexa in many cases.
And like annoyingly so. nothing. The standing there, talking to your device, mm-hmm. and waiting for something to happen is not useful. And this isn't just a first world problem, right? We need to be able to walk into a room and say, yeah, hey Siri, good night. What? I don't know why you'd walk into a room and say that. And also
because,
because
your scene and now your light's dim and yeah.
Yeah, I mean yes. Hey Siri, turn on lights for work. And it needs to happen, and it needs to happen super fast.
Yes, it does.
Because otherwise, you feel like an idiot, and you're just standing there, and you could just have walked over and hit the damn light switch.
Yeah, that's true. All right, here's something that I've done, Brian, because I've been annoyed by that very same thing. And for me, the frustration is double because I'll try it with Siri, try it with Alexa, and it still doesn't work. I went and bought the remote switches for Hue bulbs. Mm-hmm. I actually have two of them. And they're on the walls for two reasons. First, because me trying to change the behavior of other people that has been ingrained in them since birth, mm-hmm. not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So I have to adapt to it. With those switches on the wall, I don't have a problem with someone physically turning off the switch for a light, which then kills the ability to use it completely. Mm-hmm. They push the buttons instead. But the other thing is, if I'm sitting on the couch and I tell Siri to do something with the lights, and it doesn't happen, and it doesn't happen, and Siri just sits there in that kind of processing mode. Mm-hmm. I try twice, and when it doesn't work, I've actually gone and set up every single one of my Siri scenes mm-hmm. as Alexa scenes as well. Mm-hmm. So then I tell Alexa to do the same thing. And if Alexa can't do it right away, which sometimes happens, then I get up off the couch, walk across the room, push the button on the wall, go back and sit down on the couch again. And it's as ridiculously stupid as it sounds.
Yeah, this is stuff that is going to keep people away from home automation. I mean, like, you know, nerds like us, and, you know, of course, you know, we also do this stuff for testing, but, you know, we're nerds, and, you know, we like to do the fun, cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And lots of people do. Tinkerers do. But normal people are not going to find this useful, and they're not going to invest in it. This stuff has got to perform flawlessly, and it has mm-hmm. to perform fast, and it has to be at least as fast as doing the stuff with our hands and feet.
Okay. Now here's where it gets really frustrating for us, because what we're experiencing is not what everyone experiences. So these problems with the Echo stuff, with the Siri stuff, is not consistent.
Yes.
And
my limited testing so far, I agree with that.
Yeah. So I do know people that have smart home setups where everything just works beautifully. I'm willing to accept that I'm going to have trouble because I'm putting together stuff in ways that the device makers probably never really intended. And I have such a hodgepodge of stuff on my smart home network. And I've even hacked stuff that isn't HomeKit to be HomeKit. And basically, I'm doing everything I can to ruin this. And it still works. Not reliably, but it still works. But there's other people where they set up their Hue stuff. Siri talks to it. Alexa talks to it. And it just works.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
Yeah.
By the way, the Sylvania app is only for delivering firmware updates.
Okay.
I actually read the description this time after I opened it, and the interface stinks because you get a notification next to the devices if there's a firmware update available, but as it is, it just lists them and doesn't actually tell you no firmware available update or even up to date. That would be the thing for it to do. So it's a pretty terrible user interface, and it is specifically for Sylvania's HomeKit only products.
Okay, so the interface as you're looking at it now, mm-hmm. do you have updates for the bulbs or not?
No, I do not.
Okay. But that wasn't something you were able to easily determine the first time you looked at the app.
No, because if you like, I open the app, it has one screen. There's a privacy policy in terms of use links. Other than that, there are no buttons to go anywhere else. And it still says Sylvania at the top. And then it has a gray bar that says updates available, but then nothing listed underneath that. And then it has another gray bar that says devices, and it lists my two devices, which in this case would be the two bulbs in your fixture. But I can't do anything with that. Touching either one of the lists, it actually looks like it could be a button in iOS 10 or 11, right? But it's not. Nothing actually happens. Pressing and holding doesn't bring up additional information. It gives me the firmware version that both are running. So that is, that's just terrible user interface.
That is a terrible user interface.
There's so much that they could do. To just clear it up. Like for instance, having the message firmware up to date.
Yeah.
For no update. Available.
No updates available.
Yeah.
Yep.
And in my ever so humble opinion, they should give you some information. Like if you press and tap and hold. Should be some information like how many hours the darn things run.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't even thought about getting that piece of information. I was thinking get the device name, get its IP address.
Serial number?
Serial number.
And here's another thing. So the boxes came out of the box with a piece of paper, and inside that piece of paper was a sticker with the HomeKit ID number.
Yep, that's pretty standard, that little sticker.
What if I lose that?
Oh, there's not a sticker on the bulb?
There might have been. I didn't see one.
That's what happens a lot of times. You'll get the piece of paper, but then you'll also have the same label that's on the device itself, which is nice. Like, let's say you get on a ladder, you put bulbs in a ceiling fixture, you get back down, you want to set everything up and scan the code. You don't have to climb back up and try and scan a code that's probably facing the wrong way for you to see anyhow.
Yeah, but it would be nice if it was there in case.
Yeah.
As a fallback. And I also noticed that according to the home app, some devices allow you to, I guess they probably have NFC or Bluetooth built into them, so you can hold your phone. You can hold the phone with the home app running near the device and it'll auto detect. Mm-hmm. And these don't have that. And to me, if they're going to bother to make this not require a hub and be able to communicate through Wi-Fi, it seems like they should have gone ahead and made that extra step.
I believe that's a Bluetooth thing. And that would have been a nice thing for them to include.
But it would certainly make it some more expensive, maybe not much, but some.
Well, considering that you spent $35 for the bulb,
$38 for each of them.
Dollars. Okay. Yeah. Still, you're spending under $50 for a smart bulb, which I know how insane it sounds as these words come out of my mouth. That's a pretty good price.
Currently, at some point we'll laugh at it at some point not too long from now, we will be laughing at spending that much on a smart bulb. They've already come down since they were first introduced.
Right.
And there is ever more competition, especially now that you have a company like Sylvania competing with Philips. That should be great for pricing.
Yeah. Yes. And Philips, they have a white only bulb that's $15.
Yeah. And I think the Sylvania one was $19. Okay. $99, $20, something like that.
Okay. So hopefully this...
That's retail as opposed to whatever Amazon, because Amazon's charging less for this full color bulb than it retails for.
Right. Which is pretty standard
for them. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course. I mean, retail has essentially been made meaningless. Retail pricing has essentially been made meaningless.
Yeah. It's a number that's generated to make us feel better about what we pay on Amazon.
Yep. Now, one more thing.
Okay.
The documentation with these bulbs was entirely HomeKit centric. So on the front it says, "Hey Siri, lights on." Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
My light's already on, so I was wondering if it was going to do anything. And on the inside, it's got nothing but screenshots of the home app.
Okay.
It's examples of what to do with it, with very clear and well-written instructions on how to get these going through the home app. And all entirely iOS and iPhone and HomeKit centric. I call that a plus for anyone who's wanting to do a HomeKit specific
smart home. That's very cool. One thing that annoys me about so many of the accessories that I've added into my setup is that I have to create a special account with the device maker. And that's even though I'm doing the HomeKit thing.
Yeah, this is geared to be done through HomeKit. I mean, I'm sure that they basically very much wanted to work with Apple, right? Mm-hmm. And they probably did work with Apple to make sure that this was what Apple wanted. I'm unimpressed with the cycling through some of the lights some of the times. Unimpressed with that. I'm also unimpressed with some of the HomeKit performance on this thing. But if you're looking for a HomeKit only light that doesn't need a third party hub, giddy up.
All right, I'm going to get one bulb so that I can test it out, and I'll let you know if I have the weird color thing happen.
Yeah, please do. And the last thing would be one of my scenes I named Lights Half On. Mm-hmm. And Siri really struggles with that. Oh, and I've also found that sometimes my settings get changed in a scene. Have you seen that? Mm-hmm. What the heck, Apple? Come on, man. I'll find that, like, I set up a scene and I know what I'm doing. I set up the scene, I set the lights to a particular percentage, and then I come back later and that scene has different percentages in it.
Yeah. Yep. And I'm looking forward to when you have the thing that I deal with, which is I tell a scene to turn on, but not all the lights in the scene turn on.
I've had that happen several times.
Oh, okay.
And I was thinking that may actually be an issue communicating with the device. I don't know,
but it happens to me often enough that it's really annoying, and and then I just have to say turn off the lights and try again.
We should call this segment of the show Apple's HomeKit Beta.
Oh, yeah, we totally should, because that's really what HomeKit, smart home in general, but HomeKit specifically feels like a very beta thing to me.
Yeah, and I am happy I'm happy to go through that beta process because it's what we do.
Sure.
But I would... Apple needs to get its act together on this.
I agree.
It really, really does. Ordinary people are not going to adopt these kinds of technologies with this status.
Oh, no. No. Until it reaches I call it my parent threshold, until it reaches a point where I'd be comfortable either setting this up for my parents or telling them how to do it, then it's not ready for prime time. And that's where we are right now. I wouldn't even consider putting any of these smart home products into my parents' home.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
So here's another fun one.
Can you imagine explaining to a non-technical person like your parent and saying, like, okay, well, now sometimes you're going to walk in. Okay. And just stay there. Look at your phone until it actually does it. And sometimes it won't actually do what you told it to do, but that's cool. Just open up the app, you know, tap the scene off and then tap it back on. And that should bring both the light bulbs on. But if it doesn't, just do it again. And they'll eventually both come. I mean, could you imagine explaining that?
No. And I also can't imagine saying, oh, Dad, I know what the problem is. You need to reboot the light bulbs. it's crazy.
Okay, to be fair, you could just say, go turn the light switch on and off. Of course, you couldn't do that if it was a smart switch necessary. You might not be able to do that with the smart switch.
Yeah, some of the smart switches Well, no, that's not true. All the smart switches that I have seen where like it goes into the wall, they have like a manual kill switch. Mm. So you can essentially cut, not essentially, you can cut the power to the switch and reboot the switch.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, the things you're experiencing. Here's another one that you'll get soon if you haven't had it happen yet, where a scene turns on, but the bulbs aren't the right colors. They're the colors from the previous scene.
Yes, I've had that.
Oh, okay.
Already had that.
Yep.
Multiple times.
You have to turn off the lights and do the scene again, and then they'll probably come up the right color.
I've also had it where the scene adopted in the settings the colors for another scene, the scene that was on previously. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the light, the percentage in my case, right? We talked about this a few minutes ago.
Yep.
Yeah. This stuff is not acceptable. It's not acceptable. It's not ready for prime time, and Apple needs to get this stuff right.
All right. Now, here's where I'm going to make you sad. I have found that for general use with this stuff, you know, like not just me sitting in the middle of all this and putting up with the weird stuff that happens, but other people coming in my home and trying to do things, I need to have everything set up through the Echo, because for other people using it, it's far more reliable.
Yeah, I'm not going to use the Echo.
Yeah, so
not going to do it.
Which
I'm also, by the way,
double entering everything that I do, once for Siri, once for Alexa.
Okay, but that's, I mean, and for people who don't do what we do for a living, that's insane.
Yeah. Yes. If someone asked me today, what voice control platform should I adopt for smart home control?
None of them.
I would tell them, well, I really want to know why you want to do this. And if they're really insistent.
Why do you want to do this to yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. But if they're really insistent, they're like, no, I want to learn this technology. I this is just something that I want to have fun playing with. I'd say, okay, well, go spend $35 on an Echo Dot and start buying stuff and just.
No, okay. Let me fix that for you. Go spend $35 on a home wiretap and start building from there.
Somehow I knew I was triggering you.
Yeah, this stuff is, I am happy to do it. There's a lot of stuff about having just these two bulbs in just a few days that I like. The colors in particular I like, believe it or not.
No, I'm totally with you. I
blue have, in the day, warm at night, and then, you know, being able to turn on, you know, 1% for getting up to pee, mm-hmm, in the middle of the night.
So that's the scene you need to create now. Hey Siri, I have to pee.
I did. I called it. I need to pee. Hey Siri, I need to pee.
Yep. That's brilliant. That's exactly what.
Yeah. My lights are now at 1%.
That's awesome. Yeah. I have my color bulbs turn to red when I go to bed. When I say Siri goodnight.
Yeah.
My bulbs drop to, I think it's like 15%, and they turn red. Mm-hmm. And I've had some people think that that's my sexy time scene.
Oh yeah.
Which I can understand why, but no, it's, you know, red light, as opposed to light that's going to screw up my circadian rhythms and dim. And, now if the Barry White starts playing with it, now, you know, it's sexy time.
Right. Yeah. I've got a nighttime setting for red. Blue in the day, red in the evening.
Yep.
Warm in the evening. It's not actually quite red. So anyway, that's where that stands. I am happy to finally be playing with this stuff. It's not ready for prime time. Apple needs to get its act together. And in my opinion, I respect the fact that you think that Alexa is doing some of this better. And from what I've seen, I'm going to agree with that, but I don't think Alexa is any better. And it's a wiretap device, so I'm not doing it.
Yeah, I know.
So there.
And while I'm saying Alexa is doing some of this stuff better, Siri is so much smarter at it. And what Alexa is getting better for me right now is reliability for response.
Yeah.
But the whole Alexa thing, I mean, there is no intelligence in that at all.
Yeah, for sure. It's rote parody stuff. Yeah. All right. Hey, listen, I want to be done.
Okay.
Earlier.
Okay.
The normal. It's a busy day. Got a pop point out to record too. I'm cheating on you.
That's all right. We have an open relationship, Brian.
Yes, we do. While we're talking about HomePod and we're talking about HomeKit and stuff, mm-hmm. you had some kind of point about HomePod and iPod. Now, you actually stepped through it before the show, but I wasn't listening.
Of course you weren't.
So I have no idea what this topic is about.
All right. So the SiriKit developer notes are out so that developers can figure out what they need to do to make Siri work with their apps with right. HomePod.
Right.
And this is part of iOS 11.2, which is available to developers right now. Oh, wait. It looks like the public beta of 11.2 is out now.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so it's a beta thing right now.
Right, but while we were recording.
Yeah, so that's really cool. All right, so the way this works is that if you want to do more than talk to the HomePod for music playback, then you need to hook in through SiriKit. And with SiriKit, you're going to be able to do a lot of different things. You can make specific apps launch or do things, and you can make payments happen. So you can tell your HomePod to pay someone. Let's say we go out for lunch, and you forget your wallet, and so I pay, and you get home, and you tell your HomePod, "Hey Siri, send Jeff $23."
Sure.
And
something I would never do, by the way, but go ahead.
Exactly. Well, I figured it was a safe scenario because it's total fantasy. But anyhow, so if you want to do any of these other things that that are more sophisticated, that fall outside of the "Hey Siri, play Steely Dan." I don't know why I picked Steely Dan. Is that a trigger for you?
No, I like Steely Dan.
Okay, then Steely Dan is a safe place for today. Great. You need to have your iPhone nearby, because what happens is SiriKit will listen through your HomePod and respond through your HomePod, but it hands the processing off to your iPhone.
What?
Yeah. So that means that if you're doing anything that involves SiriKit, you're actually using your HomePod as a $350 speaker for your iPhone.
That is ridiculous. Are you kidding me?
No, I've got the developer SiriKit.
That's the whole point. This thing has got, what is it, an A8 processor, right?
Yep.
That's what, three generations old? Four generations. 8X, 9, we're at 11 now.
It's a 64-bit processor.
The 64-bit, yeah, I thought that was the entire point of putting that processor on there, is that this device is going to be able to deprive, so we're still going to have our phones with us?
Yes.
That is freaking ridiculous, man.
You almost made us edit.
Yeah, well, I've already used a bit of...
You're fine with everything else.
Anyway, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. This thing needs to operate as a standalone device so you don't have to carry. It's the whole point. So you don't have to carry your phone with you.
Yeah, with the processor that's in there.
Phone with you while you're sitting in your living room doing this stuff. That is so ridiculous.
I'm with you. It just has me baffled. It doesn't make sense why Apple would do this. I'm curious what the reasoning is, because it's not like the processor can't handle it, and it's not like,
well, if the processor can't handle it, then they should have used one that could.
Yeah. So why does it send all the processing back to your iPhone?
A RAM issue? a RAM or storage issue?
Maybe. But if that's the case, then why didn't they put enough RAM or storage in to be able to handle that?
It's not like flash storage is expensive, especially at the low denominator. I mean, like a 16 gigs of flash storage, which would be like way more than a HomePod would possibly need, would be pennies at this point, dimes at the most.
I just came up with a hypothesis.
Okay.
And the hypothesis goes like this. Let's use the lunch example again. What if I was a jerk and I walked into your house and I see your HomePod sitting there and I say, "Hey Siri, pay Jeff $25." And so now your Apple Pay account just sent me $25.
Is it just Apple Pay stuff?
Or your bank account, or however it links in.
Is it all financial transactions and only financial transactions?
Well, that was just the example. You can do a lot of other things. You can.
Then your reasoning doesn't apply to anything else.
What about your calendar? What about your contacts? Should I have access to that information? That's all voice locked or voice imprint locked on your iPhone, because I can't hold up your iPhone and do "Hey Siri." And that's a form of security. So maybe that's the reason Apple's doing this. This is their way of keeping Siri as a single user thing, unlike what you have with Google, where anyone can access all of your personal information just by talking to the Google Home box. So I'm not saying this is a great reason, but I could see where this is a compromise.
Does the documentation say that anything involving personal data requires your iPhone?
Hold on, let me hop back to the Siri Kit page. No, it says everything other than music control.
So like smart home stuff, turning on my lights.
Your iPhone needs to be nearby.
That's so okay. I've got a problem. That's ridiculous. Then that the scenario you came up with is probably necessary at this point, but doing all the other stuff that's ridiculous. It's useless.
Mm-hmm.
It is useless.
So now the types of things that you'll be able to do with Siri Kit initially are, as far as I can tell, kind of limited, because you're talking about stuff that involves dealing with contacts, dealing with messaging, dealing with any sort of notes lists that you've made. It's looking to me like everything that you're able to do with Siri Kit today is designed to involve your personal data directly.
Not your HomeKit stuff.
HomeKit is personal.
But it shouldn't be.
But it is. So if I come into your house, I can't control any of your HomeKit devices. You have to send me an invitation to be a user on your HomeKit network. Mm. And so that's a very explicit inclusion, unlike any other voice control system in the home that we see. So when you look at, well, we'll talk about just the big ones. When you talk about Alexa, when you talk about Google Now or whatever they're calling it these days, anyone can walk in and access everything just by talking. So I think this is Apple's way of keeping things locked down for privacy. But still, it really sucks, because now here I am having to carry an iPhone around everywhere in my house to make sure that Siri does its thing.
This is really making my hopes that Apple would have a dot competitor so that I can have listening devices throughout my house so that I don't have to carry my iPhone.
So here's another thing that I just thought of. What if this just needs your iPhone to be on the same network as the HomePod? If that's the case, your iPhone doesn't need to be with you. It just needs to be on the network. So you could leave it on the desk if that's what you like to do. Go into the other room, talk to your HomePod, and it'll still do its thing. But your phone has to be on and on the network.
But what's the verbiage say?
Well, I think I'd have to go through a lot of the other documentation to see for sure.
Stuff
that I'm looking at right now, it doesn't say. But I bet that's the case. I bet it just needs to be on the same Wi-Fi network. Still,
we'll see.
The HomePod has all the horsepower it needs to be able to do all of this stuff, and it just kind of sucks that that we still have to rely on our iPhones to handle the heavy lifting.
Well, so this is kind of ironic here. Mm-hmm. And then my third, I had an idea for the third topic.
Okay.
And that's that maybe Apple has its blankety blank together.
It's ponies together. And maybe it's stuff together.
Act. Yes. It's stuff or it's act. And my premise was, believe it or not, it was the announcement today of a, what I call a significant update to GarageBand for iOS. Mm-hmm. Apple has added a sequencer. It's like a drum machine. Or a drum machine is a kind of sequencer. Mm-hmm. And a sound library and some new instruments to GarageBand. And just like earlier in the year, we got a press release for a Logic update, a minor Logic update, a point Logic update. Mm-hmm. Point. This is a point release for GarageBand, and we get a press release again, and I'm excited by that, and I'm always excited to see GarageBand and Logic get any kind of love, although I would like GarageBand for Mac to get the same love, and I would also love to see both of these features added to Logic. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, I was thinking to myself, you know, Apple has had a really good 2017 for new products. Mm-hmm. We had all the new products that we saw at WWDC. We've had the Logic update. We've had now this GarageBand update. There's been a couple of other releases. iOS 11 is humming along, and macOS High Sierra is humming along. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I in particular have been ranting and frothing at the mouth at Apple's terrible release cycle and product history in 2016. And it seems like maybe in 2017, they've got their act together. And it's a bit ironic considering all the complaining we just done about HomeKit, because HomeKit, Apple does not have its act together.
No. And then we just kind of bagged a little on HomePod, based on what we're learning now about SiriKit.
Right. But I'm thinking, despite all that, that we're seeing some good things. I think this GarageBand announcement, it's a good sign that Apple realized that it really screwed up in 2016. That it really screwed up. Going 9 months with three new products from the last part of 2016 and the first half of 2017, that was a mistake. Mm-hmm. That releasing 14 new products only in 2016 was a mistake. And I mean, they're well ahead of that right now. They're well ahead of that. And there's still a couple more products to come out here before the end of the year. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking that maybe they realize this stuff is a mistake, and we're really gonna, they've got people who are working on GarageBand, and they've got people who are working on Logic, we might even end up seeing some updates to iWork.
I would really like that.
Yeah, because it's been a long time there are some significant features that are missing in iWork.
Yeah, I don't think they're coming back either, because Apple chose to pull those significant features out for feature parity with the iOS versions.
Yeah, that's probably the case.
Which really sucks, because what that means now, as far as I'm concerned, is that the iWork suite is not for professional users anymore.
Oh, for sure. I agree with that. So, I don't think this is really necessarily at odds with all the bagging we just did on HomeKit and what we're learning about HomePod. Mm-hmm. I mean, at least we're getting this new HomePod product, and that's a good thing. And it's not even necessarily an all or nothing thing. Apple needs what we were asking for is for Apple to be iterating on its existing product lines. And it doesn't have to be perfect at everything to get that iteration part right. And they seem to be iterating on their product lines.
Yes, they do.
And that gives me hope as an Apple fan and fan of Apple's products.
You know, maybe our problem with HomePod is that we're a little jaded because we've been disappointed by some of the other things Apple has done relatively recently. And maybe it's going to work much better than we're expecting. And the thing with our iPhones needing to be nearby won't really be an issue.
Yeah, maybe nearby is actually generous enough to not be an issue.
Yeah.
That is certainly possible. If I have to have it next to me, or if I have to have it within like 20 feet of the 30 feet of the HomePod, that's going to be a problem for me. But I am still, on the whole, 2017 has been a good year for Apple.
I agree.
And we continue to get evidence that this isn't the aberration, that the aberration is going to, in hindsight, is going to end up being 2016 and the first part of 2017.
And I hope that's true.
Yep. I do too. All right. Listen, I got some things to do. I think you do too.
Yeah, you have some serious ranting to do with John. So this was like a nice warm up for Pop 0.0 for you, right?
Yes.
Awesome. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys do and how this cathartic therapy works out for you on Pop 0.0. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. Gonna have to do some vocal warm-ups for all the cursing.
Oh boy, howdy.